Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com.
Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences, itineraries and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
Time to talk personal computers. Hi, everybody. Larry Mueller here. Glad you're with us today as we visit with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. If you have a question or need some advice about your computer use, feel free to join in. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. Pete, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
And, you know, I was talking before the show, spam made up about 59% of all email monitored in this one study, and much of it related to financial scams. And that pretty much holds for me. We've got some pretty good filters for filtering out materials, but still a lot gets through.
Yeah, it's, you know, it obviously keeps getting worse. And what's unfortunate is the fact that some people buy into these scams, and that's why it's lucrative, profitable for them, you know, to keep bombarding people, because the lists get bigger, more people get online. Mm-hmm. Those the lists that they get are from people that harvest emails and then sell these CDs with gazillion email addresses. And we've talked about this for years. What you have to do is resist the temptation to be taken off of their list, because what you're actually doing mm-hmm. when you, you know, unless it's like a, you know, a valid institution, financial or otherwise, that is really asking you to subscribe, and you're somehow affiliated or associated with them in maybe in the bricks and mortar world, but you really have to scrutinize, because if you say take me off your list, you're validating your email address to them and saying, ah, I've got one. And what happens then is sometimes it propagates even more spam emails, because it's, oh, I got this one goes now to this extra list that I've got stored somewhere, because now I've got a valid email and I'm going to sell it to, you know, whoever, and it just keeps getting worse and worse. Some of the things that you can do to try and fight it, they're internet service providers, and you just have to check with them. So if you've been signed up with a long time and maybe you get emails from them and you don't read them, you may want to check their website and see if they have some spam filtering service that they use to block. I know in some cases they try to get rid of, you know, 80+% of them, but they keep changing, so, you know, where they're originating from. So that's one way. Another way is to learn your email client, your email software that you're using, whether or not it's Outlook, Outlook Express, and Eudora, there are others out there, is to learn them and how to set up rules so that you can filter or block the messages that are coming at you. And then there are also some online services that you can subscribe to. I've got some listed through my tips page, which basically allow you to, you know, create another barrier for them to get through. In other words, they send you, the way some of these services work is someone sends you an email and you have to validate them. So the service sends a code back to the originator, the sender, and says, if you're really a person and you really want to get through to this person, you need to click on this link and validate it and give a brief summary of what, you know, what you're trying to do or who you are, and then that sender gets put on a valid list, and the end user, the recipient, gets to look at that and say, oh, okay, I do want to see that email. So that's how they get through. So that's how some of those services work.
Well, lots of people to visit with you, so we will go right to the phones now and to Cheryl in Ashland. Cheryl, hi. Cheryl, are you there?
Hi, Cheryl from Madison.
Yeah, go ahead, Cheryl.
Hi. I have a question about a brand new laptop computer that I have that came with some software for Windows XP and an upgrade for Windows Vista.
Okay.
And I have heard that sometimes it's a little bit better just to start with Windows Vista without, like, doing the XP and then the upgrade. Since this computer has no software loaded on it at all, is it better for me just to forget about the XP and the Windows Vista upgrade and go out and just buy a new Vista program, or am I really okay with just starting right now with the new XP and the upgrade?
So do you have any software that you own, or is this, you know, completely brand new from top to bottom?
The computer is completely brand new from top to bottom. It hasn't ever been turned on.
But do you personally own any software?
I do personally own the disks for my old computer for Windows XP Professional. With the new computer, I got disks for Windows XP, I think it's Media Center, and the Vista upgrade.
Okay. But do you have any other products like Microsoft Word for XP, or did you get any new copies for Vista? You know, what are you using the system for? The reason I'm asking these questions is because, for example, in my business applications, there are a lot of products that do not work for Vista that I need to use on a daily basis.
Okay.
So I'm taking this wait and see, you know, and what's going on with some of these other upgrades, because I can't really step forward to their new Windows environment because they have products that I need to use on a day-to-day basis that simply don't work.
Okay.
And if you have Microsoft Office for XP,
I do.
There's a new version called Office 2007 that they released at the same time.
Okay.
That if you have an upgrade to that and you're using primarily Word and Excel and maybe some of their other Office products, and that's what you use on a day-to-day basis, you can survive with those upgrades. So you can survive with Vista. You can survive with the new versions of Office. But if you're using some other products that aren't, you know, certified or Vista compatible, you almost have to, you know, you have to install it and see if it'll install.
Okay.
So you're doing a lot of work to get to that new level.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is, if you have things that work in XP, it's a stable, for all intents and purposes, it's really a stable operating system. It's been out for, what, about 7 years.
Right.
You know things are going to work with it. A lot of fixes that have taken place, you know, for security and so forth. It's a safe bet that, you know, you're going to be happy with it.
Okay.
With Vista, there's still some unknowns there that, you know, unless you're absolutely, you know, sure. My daughter said, "Dad, how come I don't have Vista?" And I went out. I upgraded her system. I can install XP. I can install Vista on it. So I put Vista on it. And I'm like, okay, now, and I hardwired the internet connection to it.
Okay.
So I ran a tethered, you know, 50-foot cord to my internet router hub switch and pulled the signal and did all these upgrades and all these fixes to it, installed Office 2007 that Microsoft was so nice to provide for me.
Okay.
And then I went and said, okay, now I need to put it back in her room and hook it up with a wireless connection. And lo and behold, the manufacturers of the card did not provide me with updated device drivers for Vista. So I said, okay, you know, I can live with that. That card's fairly old. So I'll go out and I'll be not Mr. Nice Dad. And I go to the friendly neighborhood retail store and pick up a wireless adapter. And I go, okay, I'm going to spend a little bit more. So I buy something that's matched up to my router so I can be the fastest I possibly can be.
Right.
And I'm thinking, Yeah, you know, I look at the date on the thing, and it says it came in, you know, in the middle, the third week in February, and I'm like, you know, maybe this should be Vista okay, and as they released Vista in early February.
And it wasn't.
And I'm like, yeah, maybe I should ask the salesperson or something. Maybe I should, nah, I said, nah, I'm going to take this back. They got to have their act together, bring it home, put it in. And there are no Vista drivers for it, not only in the box, but not even online through the manufacturer.
Okay.
And I'm like, you know, I don't need this because
right.
I just went through all this work. And now I wiped it clean and put XP on it, put the old adapter in, got my money back on the wireless adapter. And when I took it back, I asked, has this been a problem? They said, oh, absolutely.
Right. Okay.
So I'm just giving you my little, not hard. I wouldn't call it a horror story, but it was a lot of work that I did to try and move forward, and I couldn't. So.
Yeah. So maybe I shouldn't even install the Vista upgrade.
I would wait. You own the license. Down the road, you can always use it.
Okay.
I would play it safe for now.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Cheryl. Thanks for calling. And Alan in Muskego, it's your turn. Hi, Alan.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Hi. I'm running XP Home with SP2 and all the updates. Roadrunner, my browser is Internet Explorer. My antivirus is McAfee, System Mechanic 6, an occasional visit to house call. About 5 weeks ago, I started losing portions of my audio. I have no system sounds. As far as email goes, if I receive a program or a link, I have no audio. But if I get an email with an attachment, the audio in the attachment plays. It plays music CDs, yet games with audio that I run, I have no sound.
Hmm.
Now, I don't know if either of you gentlemen are familiar with the Cal's Gallery Plus, the website.
What is it called?
Cal's Gallery Plus. It's a group of games and beautiful slideshows. They have background music. I went on it last week, and the first slideshow presentation was aircraft. Played it with the music. No music came through, yet towards the end, where there were two photos of fighter jets crashing the sound barrier, I got the sound barrier effect, but again, no music in the background. And my first question is this a recognizable problem or a known virus?
I wouldn't say it's a virus. It sounds like, have you done any kind of upgrading or changes to any of the multimedia components of the system, or is it a laptop, a desktop system?
It's desktop.
Desktop. How old is the system?
About a year old.
Okay. What you may want to do is, have you tried doing any upgrades to the device drivers for the sound card?
Yes, we have, and no change.
Have you tried to reinstall it?
Yes, we have.
So you tried the original reinstall and then also try to do updates to the driver.
That's correct. I've also tried, I don't know if this is pertinent, but I really became aware of it on the 13th of last month.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I'm going to start restoring to see if where I may have done something in the history log.
Okay.
My restore functions, I went back to restore, and there were, at least a month of points available for restore.
Mm-hmm.
None of them would restore except the previous day.
Well,
did I get you?
No. You know, when things are, you're telling me in some cases it works and in other cases it doesn't.
Right.
So there's either a conflict.
The patterns that I gave you are consistent.
Okay. Have you tried, and I don't know if this, you'd have to do it through the control panel and do add remove applications. Have you tried to remove the sound applications that came with the system? In other words, instead of doing a reinstall, you would actually remove the multimedia sound components.
Okay, now I'm in the control panel. It's sound and audio devices. Is that your...
No, it would be add, remove programs.
Oh, add and remove programs.
Right. So you have to identify the name of the product that you're using that supports your sound card in your system.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would do is if you've tried to reinstall and you've tried to do the update device driver, there may be some file in there that's still causing a glitch that if you completely remove the application that's talking to the sound card rather than overwriting the files,
mm-hmm.
so you remove it and then shut it down and bring it back up, and then it'll probably say it found new hardware and you need to go through and reinstall the sound multimedia products that support the sound card that's probably built into your main board, and then try it that way.
Well, my problem with that is I haven't installed anything in the last 2 months.
Right, but what I'm saying is somewhere there's a bit that's off in the software communicating with your system. I mean, this is one thing to try. The other thing to try is you would have to get a sound card that you would actually put into your system.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going from the sound card that's probably in your main board, because that's the way a lot of the systems are built these days.
That's where my card is, on the motherboard.
Okay, and actually upgrade
mm-hmm.
to a board that's inserted into one of the slots in your computer.
Okay.
So there'll be a way to shut your sound card off on your system and mm-hmm. insert the card and install the software to use the sound through that.
Okay. Makes sense. Good luck.
Those are really the two options that I would look at.
Good luck, and thanks a lot for calling, Alan. Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers and computer software with our guest, Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Thanks for listening in. To join us, call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Gary in Appleton is next, so let's go to Gary. Hi, Gary.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have two questions, and they're probably easy ones. One is on my brother this weekend. He had an infestation. He wants to clear the whole hard drive by formatting it.
Okay.
And he's wondering if that'll really remove everything, including the rootkits. And then my second question is, which is my question, that I have a strong interest in, and I can't find any local vendors that sell it, is for two things: internet radio, which can pick it up off my wireless using WPA, encryption, or a FM trans. It would take the signal from the headphone jack and transmit it to an FM radio. I see they're on the internet. However, locally, I can't buy anything, and I don't know which the way to go. And I'd like to hear the answer to the internet radio question first. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, why don't you hang on? Don't leave us. So you want to listen to radio through FM radio through your PC? Is that what you're...
Right. Because right now I use Windows Media Player to listen to let's say BBC or Wisconsin Public Radio or mm-hmm. Minnesota mm-hmm. Public Radio. And if I'm at the computer, it's fine. But if I want to listen to another room, it doesn't work. You can't send the sound that far.
Oh, okay. So you want to transmit it through a stereo or something?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. On the internet, I see that they have something called internet radio, but it only works on WEP security,
mm-hmm.
and nobody sells it locally.
What I would do is I would probably check some of the opinion sites out there. Because you're probably going to end up buying it online. So, using the online resources, you might find some opinions about products through epinions.com. I would also, I'm trying to remember the audio video site. It's an audio video forum that discusses a lot of these products, I think it's avsforum.com. Not positive Larry's going to try and check, but I've listed it in one of my top 10 sites probably within the last, I'd say 10 months. So I would look through some of the opinion sites in terms of what's worked. For example, when I researched my home theater and how I was going to set that up, it was very helpful because there are a lot of opinions as related to projectors to use and screens and things like that. So what I'm saying is those forums can be very helpful to, you know, tell you what the pros and cons of a particular brand and model, you know, and places to even buy them, because they may say, hey, you know, I got this at this price through this vendor. So that's what, how I would research that. I know there are wireless like media devices that don't sell for a lot, that you can even look at some eBay vendors that might have closeouts on prior models that would work, you know, compared to buying the latest and greatest, you know, what was just released. So, you know, those are some of the options that you'll be presented with. So hopefully that helps. And as related to the infestation, there's two flip sides to this. One is reformatting a drive and reinstalling everything is a lot of work. If the infestation is really severe, I've had to do that in some rare occasions. I usually recommend to try and disinfect the system, because if there's data files on it and, you know, those are infected and you put those back out there, you know, that could be a problem again. So if you've got data to rescue off of the system, when you pull it off, you may want to double scan it just to make sure, you know, before. And then if you have to reformat that drive and start over again, at least you have a pretty good feeling about the stuff, your data files that you're going to be putting back on them.
Yeah. And AVS Forum.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
AVSForum.com.
Yep.
All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot, Gary. Dennis in Superior. Hi to you.
Hi, Larry. I had a really wondering about the spam. I keep an email account, an online account, by the domain of Excite, and I get quite a few what I call spam emails that don't even appear to be addressed to me. They'll have some other combination of names and whatnot, and I don't know how they manage to get through, for one thing. And one of the other things that I might state is after receiving a spoof or a phishing email from PayPal, a phishing one, I actually went to the PayPal site and looked up their security measures. And one of the things they mentioned to say is, if you have a suspicious email and you're normally viewing things in a brief header format, is to open up the brief header to full format and look to see that the return path address matches what's showing. And most of the time it doesn't. It's some complete gibberish that, you know that that's not a legitimate app.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if the online domains are, email domains are less, how do I explain it, would have maybe less protection than if you were to do it from your local provider.
So you mean like Hotmail or Yahoo or Google Mail?
Yeah. Well, yeah, Hotmail. Those are the online providers. I'm talking
right
about like your local ISP provider.
Well, you know, Hotmail, Yahoo Mail, those have always been. I mean, that's really kind of where spam originated, because anyone could sign up for it, and you know, when you were being chased, you just, you know, turned around and got another one and said goodbye to the other email address. Versus, you know, working with a local ISP, you're going to hopefully have a little bit more personalized service, and it's spam coming at you is just coming from all different directions, And the stuff that you commented about before in terms of the header matching, you know, the return address, there are different tools out there that they use that make it look like it could be originating even from your own, you know, your own inbox.
Yes,
if they wanted.
I've gotten those too.
Yeah.
I've always been afraid to actually report those back as spam because am I actually going to do something that screws up my own account?
Right.
So I generally just delete those.
Yeah. And then, you know, with PayPal and eBay, which are popular sites, they tell you that, you know, they're not going to originate an email to you. The only occasion I see, I'm trying to remember when, I think I got notification about that there was an invoice from me, but it's not really a two-way email. It's a notification email that's just saying, you know, making a statement to you,
yeah,
not asking you to reply or act on something.
Right.
And a lot of these spoofs and phishing problems are where something comes through and says, hey, you forgot to pay for something, or there's a complaint against you, or,
right,
you know, something's happened to your account. We need your attention to this. And, you know, if you look at the text code versus, you know, the HTML version, you know, the web page where it looks real pretty underneath the surface are, you know, fake website. Well, not fake websites, but not websites,
right,
that are not, you know,
what they claim to be.
What they claim to be.
Right. No, I've got very leery on that a couple years ago, and now I never mess with any of those. You know, if I have any inquiry or suspicion,
mm-hmm,
I'll just go directly to the site that I know is legitimate.
Right. You know, and the other thing that's going on, mm-hmm, is it's a sheer numbers game. You know, just like they teach you in sales, you know, it's numbers. You got to go after the numbers. And, you know, if they start with Chase, you know, card services, or,
right,
you know,
I have one of those.
Yeah. And Wachovia and all these other. So you'll see at different times, you know, a blanketing of, you know, who's the popular target, you know, and eventually they're going to hit somebody that's got an account with them. And, you know, all we can do with, you know, radio shows like Larry and other places and all different media is just make people aware that, you know, you really need to ignore those. If you just leave them alone, you know, ignore them, filter them out, because those companies tell you that, you know, they'll send you an email and say, hey, your statement's ready. But they're not asking you to act on something. When email asks you to act on something, that's, you know, you got to be really suspicious of that.
I don't get as many of those anymore,
mm-hmm,
but I do once in a while get one and say, oh, your account's been blocked until you update this info. And
right.
Like, no, it hasn't.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, you know, I automatically, generally, I just send those off to their spoofs. Security files, that's a legitimate place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I appreciate it.
All right. Yep. Thanks, Dennis. Thanks. Thank you for calling. And well, there's all kinds of ways that they try to get people.
And you know, the ones that start to attract you through the subject lines with like some kind of friend or,
yeah,
you know, some kind of enticement or even, you know, a family member kind of thing, you really have to be very cautious because, you know, it's just can open up your whole privacy issue to, you know, another world that you just don't really want to get involved with, because,
yeah,
a lot of them are actually there. A lot originate within the States, but, you know, I think a lot of it is really coming from outside the continental U.S. and they're just kind of like boomeranging off of, you know, stateside to make it look, but it ends up going back outside. And then the jurisdiction is, you know, the FBI looks at it and there are limits to what they can do inside some of these foreign countries.
Thanks again, Dennis. Thomas in South Wayne, your turn. Hi, Thomas.
Hi. I'm a college student currently, computer network securities at Herzing College in Madison. And I had a quick question for you on the email subject.
Mm-hmm.
I run my own personal email server just so I can, you know, play with security and spam filters and such.
Right.
And one of the problems that I haven't been able to get around so far is the rather clever spammers that are putting their advertisements in pictures
Right.
And attaching those in.
Yep.
Sending those along.
Yeah, those become also, very popular.
And then also putting in lines of text that the spam filter looks at and says, oh, hey, this is okay, and then just passes it right along. Is there any possible way to start nailing down on those, or am I just going to have to put up with them?
I don't know. You know, I know exactly what you're talking about because a lot of people are getting those. And, you know, you pop open the email, the first thing you see is a picture.
Yeah.
And they have a variety of pictures, whether or not they're trying to sell you some kind of drug or,
that's,
you know,
pretty much what it ends up being.
Or a stock quote kind of clip or whatever. I think that, you know, in terms of what you're running for an email server, you can subscribe to what they call, you know, lists of known originators spam.
I've got a few of those set up already.
Yeah. You know, that's one way to do it because some of them are grouped that, you know, their origination is grouped to that's how they're, you know, getting their message out. The other one is to probably go to, I don't know if you've been to the InfoStar Virus Info Center page, but on the top part of the page, you'll see the links where it says forums. And the ones that you're probably going to want to pay attention to is the MCSE link. And I would probably go also to the MVPS link, and the plus L means it's their big list.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to some of the experts that work with the email servers and see if they have some tips or tricks for you to, you know, try and apply.
Okay.
The MCSE link has specialists that, you know, work with products from Cisco, Microsoft, and other companies at a higher level for network security. And those are the places you can probably find the answers to getting a little help for what you want to try and do.
Alrighty.
Versus just going out on Google and doing searches and spending a lot of time that way. Those are the places that have the discussions that you're looking for to, you know, to tweak your email server, which most people don't have the luxury of doing.
Good
luck. But you'll make it better for the rest of us, right?
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for calling. Rich and Edgar, your turn. Hi, Rich.
Good morning. I'm one of those, you know, increasingly rare people that have phone line internet connection yet.
Okay.
And I recently changed modems about 2 weeks ago. It's about a 5-year-old computer, and there was some lightning and so on and so forth. And anyway, I put in a new modem. Connects fine. However, the maximum connection speed I can get is about 14.4 kps. And previously, it was never more than, say 24 kps, something like that. But now I've tried everything, switching ports around, switching maximum port speeds, you know, went through all of them, diagnostics, and that. Is this due to phone line quality in general, or is there something else I can look at?
Have you tried? I'm just curious. Did you have a lightning strike that actually took out the card, or?
Yeah, the previous modem, it just gave me no dial tone, it was lightning.
It was fried. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know you purchased it new. Did you try to see if there is an updated device driver for the modem online?
No, I didn't think of that.
You might want to try doing that because there may be some kind of compatibility issue if you've what version of the operating system are you using?
It's a Windows XP Home Edition.
Okay. And have you kept up with, you know, different updates and so forth on the operating system?
That's another issue. Until about a month before that, yes, I just telling myself one day it was running faster than it ever did in the 5 years of existence. A couple of weeks later, I kept getting this blue screen, and it ultimately collapsed, and I had to use the restore disk to revive it. So now, due to the low and the low speed, I can't do updates because it's physically impossible. Literally, I try to do a simple update, and it can't handle it.
Yeah. I would try and go to the manufacturer's website for the modem and see if you can download, you know, a device driver that's more recent than what you have.
Yeah.
There might be a good chance that that might fix it.
Yeah.
The other thing is, did you change the phone line at all between the wall and your system?
No.
Or did you use the same one?
Same one.
You may want to change that too.
Oh yeah, I did. Yeah, I changed one of them. I tried different lines.
Okay.
Between the computer and the wall.
Right.
And I even connected it outside to the phone jack. You know, their box outside.
Right.
So it doesn't make any difference between the inside line and
Try seeing if you can download that device driver. And the other option is, you know, to take it back and say, you know, I can't get it to go faster and I've, you know, tried different things and, you know, can I get another one to see if it'll work?
Sure.
Because it's possible. It's pretty rare that I see that there are hardware switches that you flip. But there may be, you know, for whatever reason on your modem, there may be a switch that's just got it in low speed. You know, it's worth looking to see if there's anything like that.
Yeah.
They used to do that in the past, but I doubt it, but it might be worth looking at.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking Computers with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Thanks for listening in. We'll go right back to the phones and to...
I want to make one comment about troubleshooting hardware.
Yeah.
You know, when you change things, and I've mentioned this many times, but I haven't talked about it in a while. I've been in different situations where shutting a system down, taking a board out, dissipating you know, some static or whatever electricity, it seems to be pent up in the system, putting the board back in, sometimes that fixes things. Mm-hmm. Also, accepting at face value that what you bought new is perfect. There are failures. They are, you know, components to appliances. And I've replaced, you know, what I thought was new was bad with another thing with another bad one that I thought was new till I got to number three. And, you know, that also goes along with people building their systems, their own systems, and messing around with all the different connections. You know, yes, it's a great learning process and project, you know, if you really want to go that way. Or, you know, having the case and the system board and the memory and the CPU and all that stuff put together for you, and maybe adding a hard drive and a video card. But just being aware that when you buy something new does not mean it's perfect.
Okay. Let's go to, Joe in Fox Point?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Joe.
Larry, Peter, really enjoy the show.
Thanks.
I have a question about external hard drives. I do a lot of freelance writing and editorial work. I want to be sure I don't lose files. Last summer, July, August, I bought two, these are Western Digital, not to do a commercial, but two Western Digital, I think they're called MyBook, external hard drives, one 250 gigabyte, the other one 400, okay?
Okay.
And I've been using them routinely since that time, alternating and back up, and I've been backing up the entire C drive, hard drive. I have a Dell Dimension desktop,
okay,
2.5 years old, running Windows XP Home. Everything was going just fine. I would routinely do the backup, and the odd thing that's happened, March 27th, both of them started misbehaving in exactly the same way. And that is, when I would initiate the backup, and a backup is about 30 gigabytes of material, maybe 75,000 files, separate files, so well below the capacity. But I would start the backup, and for both units, starting on the same day, because I tried both, it will run, it'll start the backup, everything looks fine, initiate the process, it'll save, it says, about 3,000 files, 880 megabytes, and then stop. And the screen, you know, the screen that usually stays, or dialog box that appears on the screen while it's running, disappears completely. I just get thrown back to my, screensaver. No explanation of what has happened or what to check. I did go onto the Western Digital website. I sent them a note. They sent me some things to check out and also said download their, there's a data, something, data analysis tool. Use that, run the full check. So I did that on both units. Clean as a whistle, no problems with either one. They said maybe your BIOS is not up to date. Well, I have the BIOS that came with this machine 2.5 years ago. I think it's called A12. So I'm at a loss. I don't even know what question to ask next. They said if the diagnostic worked fine, then the problem is usually not with the external drive.
So when you run the backup, what are you using to run the backup? Is it the application that came?
It's the application that came with it. It's
okay.
Western Digital Backup.
Right. Have you, a couple of things. One is you probably have, like, preferences saved in that, correct?
Preferences.
You know, like, when you run the backup, it might have a name for your backup set that so when you initiate it or start it, you've saved your preferences in terms of, like, what folders to back up and where to go.
Oh, it just lets you select whatever
right.
you want.
So do you select it each time, or do you just click on backup and then it just does its thing?
No, I select each time, and mm-hmm. I select exactly the same folders
mm-hmm.
and drive,
okay.
only the C drive,
right.
and some other selected.
Right. So are these drives, so let's say you have your hard drive C and then you have a CD or a DVD drive. Are these drives typically E and F? Do you have them both hooked up at the same time or do you switch?
Generally, I would only have one hooked up at a time.
Right.
And it's
okay.
usually designated the F drive and it's
right.
connected through a USB
right.
into the back of the,
okay.
of the CPU.
Have you tried reinstalling their software? Uninstalling it and reinstalling it?
I have not tried that.
Okay. I would probably try that. It sounds like the system doesn't have any problem, is not having a problem recognizing the drives. It sounds like it's having a problem in executing the software to completion because your task is getting stopped. What I would do is go in the control panel, and it's probably going to have the application listed there that you're using.
Mm-hmm.
Which you said was called My Book. It might list it as Western Digital My Book, or it might say My Book. But I would probably uninstall the application, shut down the machine, bring it up to your desktop, and then go, and go through the same installation procedure they had when you bought the drives.
Hmm. Okay.
Now, are you sure the same software came with, the same version came with both drives?
I believe it is. It's
okay.
Just different sizes, and they were bought.
Yeah, I would reinstall the larger drive.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you have the support for the larger drive because
mm-hmm.
it's probably grandfathered in the smaller one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one that I would reinstall, and
okay.
see if that works. If that doesn't get you anywhere, you can email me off my website, and I might have some other suggestions. But I would do that one first before I would go any further.
Okay. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And just go to infostar.com for that.
Right, correct.
Mm-hmm. You bet. Don and Holman, your turn. Hi, Don.
Hey, I am a Mac user, and I love it, especially the iPhoto. But I have a problem with attachments that are sent to me in an email. and the icon is a blank page with a folded over corner. And when I try to call it up, I get a box that says, "This program requires PPP." What the heck is PPP?
Hmm.
So triple P.
Yes, triple P.
Hmm. I was hoping you were going to say PPT.
No. Nope. Nope.
That would be a PowerPoint file. You could go to, is it file? I'm trying to remember. I have them on my, TechLinks page. Is it file? EXT? Larry's trying to help me out here. There's a file. You can probably type in Google and say, you know, .ppt file extension, and you'll probably come up with a link that'll define what that is. But when you're trying to look at that, you know, if we can define what the .ppp is, that means you're missing the application to actually view that file. And that's one that I'm not familiar with, but that doesn't mean anything because there are a lot of different file extensions out there. But it was created with a program that names files that way.
I'm not finding anything. There's a PPP that relates to a virus and security issue, which it's a design virus.
You know, you might be getting a file that was determined, you know, was destined for a PC system, and because it has nothing, it won't do anything on your computer, you know, you're fine. But is it an email that you got from somebody that you know?
Yes.
Okay. But does the message look like it's, you know...
I can't ever get to the message.
Oh.
When I click on the icon at the bottom of the... email name.
Yeah,
I click on it and nothing happens except a box that comes up with.
Yeah, I think Larry hit this one right. You're probably getting an email from somebody that you know, and the message is basically empty, but it's carrying a virus that is really, you know, destined for a PC system, and because you have a Mac, you know, it's not doing anything. So,
okay. So it's a good thing.
Yeah,
it's a good thing it's not working on your system.
Right.
But this brings up another, you know, word of caution for people that get email messages is don't always assume that because it's coming from someone that you know, if the message is really empty but there's an attachment, you should be suspect that, you know, it is a virus, you know, something carrying a virus and not something intended for you.
Yeah, it is always a forward, forward, forward type of thing.
And yeah.
So it's going through a number of computers, for sure.
Yep, because what it's doing is it's infecting and then propagating. It's trying to keep going.
But because my Mac is set up differently,
It's because your Mac is not really a target recipient for the virus to do something, or the worm to do something, or the Trojan, or... So it's reached a dead end with you.
Okay.
So the message won't keep going because unless you decide to send it out to some one of your friends or family members and say, "Hey, what the heck is this?" You know,
don't
or if you
do
keep
that.
Sending it back every few months, you'll keep it going. Don't do that.
Don't do that, Don. Thank you for calling. And Frank in Port Edwards, your turn. Hi, Frank. Frank, are you there?
Good day, gentlemen. Good day.
Hi.
I'm wondering whether this Toshiba laptop I have here, which is running XP Home, is salvageable or a doorstop.
What's doing?
Well, the problem is this. It got screwed up. It was my son's machine, and I decided that the hard drive was... out of whack, so I put a new one in, and after that, I installed everything from scratch from the recovery disks.
Okay.
except that this was a 2002 XP home program, so Service Pack 2 was missing, which they informed me of.
Right.
I only have a dial-up connection, so I tried to download it overnight.
Right.
And it stalled at the during the install process. So then I got the CD for the XP2 and installed it from the CD. And sometime after that, not very long, something happened. And the result is that now I lost the software modem, and I apparently lost the DVD drive and the floppy drive in the thing. I get a message when I try to run a disk, an either one. Windows cannot read from this disk. The disk might be corrupted, or it could be using a format that is not compatible with Windows. So I downloaded and ran Mirsky's hard drive test pilot.
Okay.
And it says that the hard drive is fine, but neither the A drive or the DVD drive have errors on them. They say, since this drive has errors, HTTP will not be able to perform the scanning operation. Error was found in this drive, and then it lists three. Error, read, slant, write source data. Error, read data. Error, boot, write, slant, read.
Okay. Well, we're going to ponder that.
Okay.
As we take a look at the news, we'll be back with Peter Greed and see what we can find out about whether this laptop should be a doorstop or an actual laptop. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. We're talking computers and computer software today with Peter Greed of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Thanks for listening in. Glad to have you with us. If you want to join in, the number 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, it's 263-1890. And Pete, we had Frank in Port Edwards who was wondering whether or not to use his laptop as a doorstop or if it could actually be fixed just before our break.
Still with us, or?
I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Have you, when you were first trying to get the Service Pack 2, you were downloading it?
Yeah.
Did you had problems while you were in the middle of it?
It stalled in the middle of the install.
Okay. Now, in the middle of the install or in the middle of the download?
It was installing, and it just stopped in the middle of that.
Okay. To me, that's suspect in that not working. So did you successfully download the entire service pack, or you were trying to
I got the CD.
Right. You did the CD the second time.
Right. It's on there.
Right.
And Windows XP boots.
Right. Did it go through that Service Pack 2 just fine the second time?
From the CD, yes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any restore points on your system to go back to?
Not that are any good.
Not that are any good.
Yeah,
the only way to rule out that there are any other problems with your system is to probably go back from scratch and reinstall the XP and then reinstall with the CD the Service Pack 2 and then see if you can get your system back.
That's about the only thing to do.
Because it just sounds like there are too many errors as related to the hardware, components of your system. Piecemeal, you can try and go through and see if you can install the device drivers for the different parts of your system that are not working. If you were to go into the control panel and then go into system and then look at the hardware through your devices and see if you have any yellow exclamation marks and, reinstall them that way. If those yellow exclamation marks do exist in the different devices, if they don't, then I would really go back and do a complete reinstall and then, run the CD with the Service Pack 2 and try it again.
Try it again. Good luck. Thanks, Frank, for calling. And Pete, you have a top 10 list for us this month.
Yeah, I've got at least 10, if not 11 on there, plus a bunch of other links. If you go to Infostar.com, click on current, or if you go to the top 10 archives and then scroll down to today's date, you'll find them. This first one is for free backup services of your data files. Some offer 2 gigs, some offer 5. You just have to go to them and see what they are. You can sign up for free for a small amount. If you need more, they charge you a fee on a monthly basis, or they may have a deal for the whole year. This first one is called Mozy, mozy.com, and I've got links to a few more there. And then also on my the Virus Info Center page, I added a new category called Backups, and I put a bunch more there. This next one is called hyperhistory.com, so hyper and then history, and it's 3,000 years of history online with colorful maps and a lot more. The next one is about wildlife, to an organization that tries to protect wildlife that inhabits Africa and other continents. It's called wildlifedirect.org. And then if you're looking for some antivirus software, I've got links on the Virus Info Center page. But this one is an independent resource that does comparisons, and they've got links there too. It's called av-comparatives.org. Number 5 is Ideas for Environmentally Friendly Sustainable Living. So my recent trip, I went on, did some scuba diving. It talks about that and snorkeling and just other ideas to try being environmentally friendly. It's called EarthEasy.com. And number 6 is a travel site, and I've got a bunch of others listed that people are probably familiar with. This one I hadn't seen before, so I put it up. It's called TravelNotes.org. And someone emailed me this link and another one, and it's about saving money online with coupons and other money-saving deals, and it's called KeepCash.com. Kind of a catchy name there. The next resource is to help you find hotels, restaurants, and other attractions when you're traveling. And most of those other travel sites don't have like attractions. It's more like flights, hotels, right, and car rental and things like that. This one is called openlist.com. And then this area has been, it's going to keep booming, is a, you know, place to rent movies and television online, and it's called Realtime, REELTIME.com. And number 10 is a technology news and information resource, and it's called neowin.net. So it's neowin.net. And I've got some tax sites listed for number 11 if you're curious.
Okay.
They're all there, and all the other years' worth are up there on the archives too.
Infostar.com, that's the place to go to get all of those addresses. Dorit in Madison, it's your turn next. Hi, Dorit. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
I think I was able to reduce my spam significantly by using a service from a website called spamcop.net.
Spamcop.net. Okay.
Yeah, and it's not very straightforward. I mean, it took some digging, but I'm forwarding my spam to them, and they are generating reports to the administrators of the networks where the spam was originated and notifying them.
Right.
And after a while of doing that, I think my spam has reduced significantly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good.
What they're doing is, in conjunction with what I told the person that was going to a local tech college and working on setting up his own email servers, mentioned that they form these different resources, create these lists, and then what they do is they validate, you know, spam is originating from this site, and they add that domain to the list. And what that spam cop site is doing is building and validating these lists and then making them available to the internet service providers and providers of email services and saying, you know, here's our updated list as of April 1st, as of April 5th, and, you know, however often they update it, obviously the list keeps growing, So it's important for, you know, places to validate it, add to the list, and then the service providers incorporate those and so forth. Now, there's a little unfortunate side to that, because I've dealt with this, and I think I probably mentioned on the air, and this was probably a few years ago, is that sometimes what they do, and I don't know if the technology has changed, but someone originated spam years ago using Infostar.com, and then what they did was they added it to the list because they were saying the service provider or the hosting company that hosts, you know, X number of domains was allowing the spammers to exist on their servers. Therefore, not the, you know, one or two culprit domains was the guilty party, but the entire hosting company was the guilty party. Rather than filtering out the good from the bad, they were saying the good and the bad are all together. So I've been through something like that, and you know, it's important that those kind of spam filter or list providers try and make sure that they're not taking the bad and the good all lumped together. So yeah. I've been there before, and they said at that time they didn't have a solution. And I threw up my hands and said, well, why are you putting, you know, the innocent people with the guilty people?
Yeah.
You know, that's not a fair thing to do. So I've been through that, and that's just not a fun thing.
Yeah. Thanks, Dorit. Thank you for calling. And Mike in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
We have an older computer, probably 4 or 5 years old. I think it has 500 megabytes or whatever it's called of memory. We're running XP, and we have a high-speed internet connection. Now, my kids are playing an online game that's called Aces High. It's like a flight simulator type game.
Okay.
And we were told that the frame rate should be at 60, but it bounces all over the place. It goes from 2 to 60 to 30, and so as they're playing the game, sometimes the screen, like, freezes. It gets to be almost impossible to play.
Right.
You
want to know how to fix that?
Yeah.
The video card in your system, how is it, the original video card?
No, I recall we upgraded it.
Okay.
But I don't know to what. Sorry.
Okay. You may want to check with the video card that you upgraded to.
Okay.
There may be some things that you can tweak with your card. Some of it may be memory issues. You may have to change your pixel, you know, your display. Is the game taking over your screen so that it's in control? You know, like these online gaming places, like World of Warcraft, for example, takes over your screen and creates this environment, very vivid environment that you're immersed in.
Yes, that's what happens.
Okay. You may have to play around with your video card and see if it can support the frame rate that you need. So you're just going to have to look and see what you have. And is it used like DirectX?
Yes.
Okay.
One other thing that was mentioned is that we have too many processes running. We have something like 44 processes.
Oh, okay.
is that too much?
Yeah, what I would do, a couple of suggestions. And you said the system was like 4 or 5 years old?
Yes.
I'm trying to remember these. I told Larry I still have a little nitrous oxide in my brain or something, because I went on a spring break trip and did some scuba diving. So trying to get my bearings straight here. But if you click on start... And then if you right mouse click on My Computer and click on Properties, and then click on, I believe it's I'm trying to remember what the tab is. It might be Performance. You might have to.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would probably set up Windows for best performance. Not let Windows do it because your system.
I did that, yeah.
Okay. All right. So you're already there. The other thing that I would do is on my Infostar tips page, So if you go to infostar.com and click on tips,
okay.
If you look for the link that talks about Windows Startup, what it sounds like to me is you have a lot of icons in your lower right-hand side of your screen when you start up Windows.
Yes.
Yeah. What you need to do is you need to get rid of those.
Okay.
You can learn more about them going through that tips page. I don't want to tell you to remove all of them. You know, it's painstakingly to do, you know, turn each one off one at a time. But what you might want to do is take notes on what checkboxes are checked and then uncheck them, and you'll have to restart your computer to have them take an effect.
Okay.
But what you do is click on Start, click on Run, type in MSConfig, and hit Enter, and then click the Startup tab, and then you'll see all those checkboxes checked. And like I said, take notes so that you know which ones are on, and when you uncheck them, you're telling them to go away.
Okay.
But you have a lot of those running in the background, and that tip that I refer to defines a lot of what those are, or could help you figure them out. They might be for running a scheduled task. It might be for, you know, quick access to your video adapter, which you don't really need, because once it's set up, it's you just don't really need it. It might be Real Audio. It might be QuickTime. It might be AOL Instant Messenger. It might be WinZip that you ran once and it's starting up. So all these different things are running in the background. You need to get rid of them.
Understood.
And that will probably help.
Will increasing the memory help?
How much memory do you have?
I think it's 525. What is that?
512?
Yeah.
Yeah. Windows XP definitely likes, I've seen this numerous times, it definitely likes to have one gig.
Okay.
Two is better, but you know you might be limited in the slots that you have. To figure out what you have in your system, there's an application called Belarc Advisor. You could probably type in BELARC space Advisor. I've got links to it in the Virus InfoStar Virus Info Center page under
okay.
Utilities, but you can type that in Google and it'll probably take you to it. You download it, and it'll tell you everything in your system. It's about 95%+ accurate in terms of hardware and stuff. I have seen it count up the number of memory slots that it may say you have four, but you really only have two. So the only way to know for sure is to, you know, pop the hood open on your computer and take a look inside.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, sir.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for calling, Mike.
Have fun playing.
Take
we
a look.
Sure it was for his kids or it was for...
I don't know. John and Racine. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi.
We have a Windows XP desktop, and my question is, as we get more and more updates, it seems to take longer and longer to boot up. Is that because of the number of updates?
It shouldn't be. Have you, what you may want to try and do, have you done any, like, file maintenance and disk defragmentation on your system?
Yeah, every time I have a problem, I go to that, and it says we don't need it. We have a lot of extra space.
Mm-hmm.
And usually what ends up happening to make it react better, I turn off the automatic updates, and then mm-hmm. things speed up faster. But it's still, ever since we did the XP2 service pack, things just... boot up so slow, it's crazy.
What kind of internet connection do you have?
I have a dial-up.
Dial-up?
But it's even when we're not using the internet, just when you turn it on to start, it takes
right.
5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah. You know, there are actually some... someone's come up with these settings, and you can probably find the references for them online. I'm trying to remember if I've posted them on my website. I know I used to use them with some of the other versions of Windows, but you can do you can optimize the startup of Windows. It'll skip different steps to just bring it up, and you can also do quick shutdowns and quick reboots where it does it in a matter of, like, you know, 5 or 10 seconds instead of waiting for everything. It's kind of like it shuts the door and says, okay, restart, shut down. So you just have to probably search with Google or groups.google.com or try Google and see if you have any references for that. You know, that Service Pack 2 is pretty massive. You know, with me being, I've kept up upgrading my hardware, so I don't really notice, you know, the delays, but it's quite possible that having that automatic, you know, turned on would probably delay because it's, you know, checking more than it had in the past. And if you're using a dial-up connection, it may recognize that, and, you know, it just takes longer because it's saying, hey, these are other things that I need to look at instead. So,
things to think about there.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot
Good luck.
John in Fort Atkinson. Hi.
Good afternoon. I have a problem. I have a new laptop, and I would like to somehow get my email mailing list from my desktop to my laptop. What can I do?
So you mean your contact list?
Yeah, the list of email addresses, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, what are you using for email?
Internet Express.
So you mean Outlook Express?
Outlook Express, yes.
Okay. If you go to, I believe if you click on, go on Outlook Express and click on your desktop and click on File, and I believe it's Import, Export. What you want to do is export your address book,
mm-hmm.
and you can export that to a file, and it's usually called .wab, so whatever you call it, it's going to end in Windows Address Book is what that stands for.
Okay.
And then save it so you know where you've saved it, okay?
Okay.
And then you can either email that to yourself. So you can either write it to a CD from your desktop or email it to yourself and then log off and then get on with your laptop and log into your email and download it to your laptop and save it so you know where it is, and then you want to do the reverse. You want to import your address book.
Okay.
Does that help?
Excellent.
Thank you very much. Do you already have your email set up on your laptop?
I do.
Okay. Then you're good.
Thank you. Wonderful.
Yep. Good luck.
Thanks for calling.
It's also a good way to back up your data. I mean, you know, if you want to back up your contacts, that's what you have to do. You can export them and...
Export and import.
Yep.
All right, Bill in Orfordville, quick question from you.
Yes, hi, good morning. Thank you for having this wonderful show. I have a Macintosh, an older version G3, with the FireWires and all that sort of thing as well, but updated pretty much with the operating software. I'm not in the current, but I'm in the 10, you know, system. And I have problems, though, with my email in that I do not have, it seems I get a lot of emails that have attachments that I can't open. I'm looking for an application that I can put into my machine that would open most of these things coming in.
Well, are you, you know, wanting to open up attachments because you just want to see what they are, or do you know?
I do a softball sports thing here.
Okay.
And so I get from sports information directors at colleges and things, I get their press releases and things that come in like this.
Okay.
So the attachments are legitimate. I know exactly.
Okay.
All right. Got about 30 seconds.
Yeah. What you need to do is identify. There are some viewers out there that will, you know, if you email me, I could probably find the name. It's, like I said, I'm still a little fuzzy with the nitrogen, but there are some what are called file viewers that will, you know, open up a lot of applications, just let you see the files. But you need to identify what the application was that created it, and then...
And there you go. So email at infostar.com.
Yep.
And Pete, thank you.
Yep. Thanks,
Appreciate
Larry.
It very much. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, will be back with us in about a month. Stay with us. Lots in store.